Labyrinths is brought to you by Knox Robinson Productions. Please consider becoming a patron. For as little as $5 a month, you can listen to Labyrinths ad-free.
Visit patreon.com/KnoxRobinson to learn more.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
I'm Amanda Knox.
And I'm Christopher Robinson.
And this
is Who's Right? Between our usual Labyrinths episodes, we sit down to debate something quite serious.
Or silly.
And ask you, who is right?
It's me.
It's me.
It's me.
It's clearly me.
No, definitely me.
It's me.
Me.
No, me.
It's me.
How could it be anyone but me?
Says the man sleeping on the couch.
Okay, today we're talking about suicide.
We should probably put a trigger warning out there.
Yeah. This is not a silly one.
This is by far not a silly one. And it's in part inspired by the fact that the latest episodes of Labyrinths have all dealt with deaths of a sort.
Yeah, we had the medical malpractice episode where Richard Pallardy's mother died. And then the last episode was Kat Moore, who works as an ER doctor and brings in principles from Zen Buddhism into her work. And that got us...
Well, and also...
Oh, and then, of course, the death doula episode.
Which is all about preparing for one's death. And all of that, on top of the fact that we just watched the first episode of Shogun, in which there is a ritual suicide...
A horrifying seppuku moment, which we're going to give you, spoiler alert here.
Yeah, sorry if you haven't seen it yet.
Shogun's great, but, you know, go watch it. If you really don't want a spoiler, jump ahead 30 seconds.
Yeah, talk about a show full of death.
Yeah.
Jesus.
The thing that makes it so horrifying is that this samurai not only kills himself in ritual suicide to protect the honor of his family, but he has his son killed.
His infant son
to end the family line.
I've had nightmares ever since we watched that. Like every day I've had nightmares about that.
You know, our personal relationships with suicide are very different than honor culture Japan in the 1600s. So maybe before we get into how we might disagree about suicide here, maybe we should just unpack what our personal relationships with this very heavy topic are.
Sure. Do you want to go first or do you want me to go first?
I think you should go first.
Okay. I'm the one who had a good reason to commit suicide of the two of us. I have never really struggled with suicidal ideation in my life as a normal human being. My only experience of suicidal ideation was right after I was convicted and sentenced to 26 years in prison. And I felt utterly trapped in my own life. And for that reason, I started to imagine alternatives to being trapped in my own life and having to live out a life that it was really hard for me to imagine was worth living. That was where I was at. I was stuck in a cell. I was surrounded by, you know, traumatized people. I had lost the opportunity to have a career and have a path in my life, and above all, to have a family of my own, because after 26 years in prison, I would be barren and unable to have my own children. And I started to wonder if it was even worth it to live. So I then...
Did you know how you would do it?
I thought about it quite a bit. I knew some people who had attempted suicide in the prison, so I knew ways that didn't work. I also heard about someone who successfully committed suicide on the male side of the prison, so I knew what could work. I'm not going to go into all of them here because I've written about them before. But I settled upon one method that I thought would be the most acceptable. And then as soon as I like settled on it, I was like, okay, this is what my escape hatch looks like in its full horrifying detail. Suddenly I felt better about the prospect of living yet another day trapped in the life that I was living. And it just made it seem like I was a little less trapped as I encountered every single day.
Like you always had that one choice.
Yeah, I wasn't actually trapped. I could always escape if I really was just over it. So that was my experience.
Yeah, mine is so not that.
Yep.
I had a period of, I guess you could call it depression, where I became increasingly fixated on the idea of suicide. And it was—
How old were you?
This was in my late 20s.
Okay.
And I had quit my teaching job in New York, and I had moved into the wind, as I like to say, floating between different artist colonies and arts residencies around the country, sometimes internationally, no fixed address for 3+ years. And that was liberating and great and fantastic in so many ways. And I met so many brilliant artists and writers and musicians, and I was constantly inspired artistically, and I got a lot of writing done, which was my goal. And I was living this just like life of the arts, reading and writing and with no other job. It was amazing. And I made zero money, but I lived off the generosity of these fellowships. But as a consequence of moving to a new place every 6 weeks, my personal relationships began to crumble. I had no real sense of stability in my life. I was writing a lot of poetry. I was working on a novel. I hadn't sold a novel yet, and I hadn't really made a dime from writing at all. And so my career didn't really feel like it was going anywhere. And as much as I was artistically inspired, I didn't see that path necessarily stretching out before me as a sustainable one. Like, was I just going to be hopping around every 6 weeks at artist colonies for the rest of my life? That didn't seem like a good plan. But I didn't have a better plan. I didn't want to be adjunct teaching in New York. And, you know, that the plan in front of me also didn't seem like it was going to yield a lasting relationship. And I was feeling increasingly alone. And I found myself writing a collection of sonnets that were kind of all about suicide. And then I got this writing residency where I moved to a tiny town called Lanesboro, Minnesota, in the wintertime. And it was a small, like, a summer resort town that had, like, hiking and, you know, whitewater rafting and stuff. It was one of those sort of towns. But in the wintertime, it was dead and there was no one there. Mm-hmm. But there was a little art gallery there that had an apartment above it. And I had applied for and won this fellowship to live in the apartment above this art gallery in a sleepy town in Minnesota by myself. You know, and I was drinking, you know, a lot of Manhattans that I was making by myself in the apartment. There was nothing to do but hang out at the local VFW. So especially in that period, I found myself really thinking about suicide. And I got there in a very philosophical way, which is, I think, very different from yours, but maybe you wound up with a philosophical angle on it. But mine was always more about just thinking about my life and viewing it as a proposition that didn't have to continue indefinitely and of course, wouldn't continue indefinitely. And if I knew it had to end at some point, I started to feel kind of, the more I thought about it, more neutral about when exactly it would end. And like, was the life better if it was longer? Not necessarily. I don't feel that way about books or movies, you know? Not every book has to be 1,000 pages. Some of the best books I've ever read are 212 pages, say, right?
And there are all those famous poets who are amazing and just blinked out of existence when they were like 25
oh, yeah.
from tuberculosis.
John Keats, you know, did all of his work by age 24, you know, and yet his legacy continues in the world of poetry, right? So I had been thinking about that stuff in my artistic life, and I ended up applying those ideas to my actual life and thinking that, well, why not choose when I walk out of this movie? Why wait until life chooses for me? Mm-hmm. And when I was especially in this kind of depressive place, those thoughts took on another character, and I found myself researching methods and thinking about it. And, you know, the method I was drawn to was the exit bag, where you get a canister of nitrogen gas and a plastic bag and, you know, seal yourself in and breathe in the gas and slowly pass out, and there's no choking sensation, and you leave a nice corpse for your family, you know?
What does that mean?
Well, it means that if you're going to do it, you don't want to create a mess for your friends or family to clean up, you know?
I see. As I guess, okay.
You shoot yourself.
As far as corpses go, it's a nice corpse. I see. Okay. Got it.
So, I mean, I obviously didn't do it.
Yes.
Yeah. And I'm glad I didn't do it.
Mm-hmm.
And shortly after that period, a close friend of mine did kill herself. And it really, really affected me deeply. It still does. And
do you think it affected you deeply because you had already had suicidal ideation yourself?
Yeah, I knew what it was like to really think about my own death a lot, and not just death, but like non-existence. And maybe this is a point we should unpack, because for both of us as atheists and scientific materialists, there's not an afterlife.
Mm-hmm.
And so thinking about death is equivalent to thinking about non-existence.
Yeah.
And I feel like, I don't know, I'm not going to say this makes me special. I don't think it's a good thing necessarily, although maybe it is. And maybe this is what we can debate here. But I feel like I have probably thought more about my own death than most of my friends have, or my peers. I think you and I might be similar in this regard, but I look at the way our culture looks at death, and I've seen it with my own relatives and in the medicalized, institutionalized world we live in. As they get older and older, they wind up taking increasingly desperate measures to prolong their lives at any cost.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't see that
as if life, no matter what it looks like, is inherently more valuable than non-existence, right?
Yeah. And that to me does not seem like you are facing the prospect of your own non-existence, really. It seems like you're fighting it tooth and nail, you're denying it, or you're turning away from it, and you're not wanting to look at it.
Mm-hmm. Well, so here's a question that maybe we can ponder as well. I'm going to go out on a limb and say that probably you and I agree, just theoretically, that a person's life ultimately belongs to them.
Yeah, I think we're on the same page there.
And so it's not anyone else's choice but theirs to decide if they want to end their own life, theoretically, right?
Mm-hmm.
Theoretically.
I'm with you.
In an ideal platonic world, that is the case. However, the way that that ends up translating into the real world is people who shouldn't be committing suicide commit suicide. And
define shouldn't be.
Shouldn't be because, all right, well, if you go on like suicide websites where they're telling you not to do it, they'll often say things like people, like a myth about suicide is that people who are suicidal want to die, when in fact, what is happening is that they don't want to die. They just don't want to be experiencing life the way that they are experiencing it in that moment. They're either in pain or they are lonely and they don't know, they don't have the perspective to understand that whatever that feeling they have is not going to last forever. And so they take that desperate measure, not because they want to die, but because they don't want to keep on living, which is an important distinction. And so those are the kinds of people who likely should not be committing suicide because they are attempting to address their problem of living with a solution that they don't actually want. And, you know, I talk about this a little bit with when I go and give talks, like, you know, here I was and living in the worst experience of my life and I hung in there and inevitably, life goes on and changes, and it's important to have that perspective that nothing ever stays the same unless you are a terminally ill person, unless you have like a terminal, unsurvivable situation. Only then is it like okay or quote makes sense to commit suicide.
Why is that different than your life is terminally sucky?
Because your life isn't terminally sucky.
Well, then why isn't your life terminally sucky when you're dying of something?
So it's only terminally sucky if you are sick and like you are in the process of dying and the process is painful and drawn out and there's no hope of it not being painful and drawn out.
Yeah, but you know, I'm going to push back here because if you can find a way to enjoy a life that is filled with non-physical pain, psychological pain, if you can find a way to reconceptualize that or position it in some way that life is worth living, why can't you do that with physical pain?
Because physical pain is, I mean, can I bring you back to the Shogun episode where they boil a man to death? Like, I think that guy would have rather been put out of his misery or put himself out of misery than boiled to death. I'm just going to go out on a limb there.
Yeah. I mean, it's extreme and it's hard to, you can't just meditate your way through being boiled to death.
You can't. And sure, there have been people who have exceptionally meditated their way through lighting themselves on fire in protest. But like the vast majority of us are not accomplished meditators enough to be able to experience pain, like deep, deep pain, prolonged pain, in any way else but in the negative. You can't like...
Let me posit a scenario here. Let's
okay.
say, let's pick a person. We'll
All
call
right.
him...
Chris.
And let's say that a terrible, tragic accident happens. Let's say I'm 70, right? I've got another 20 years to go, hopefully. But, you know, my knees have been replaced and I'm not as active as I used to be, et cetera. And then some terrible tragic accident happens and you and my children and grandchildren are all on a, you know, family vacation or something that I couldn't make for whatever reason. And the boat capsizes or you all die, right? And let's say even I've outlived some of my other closest friends and, you know, or, you know, become estranged, who knows, right? Let's say that overnight my social world and my sort of familial love world has just been rendered
utterly devastated.
Yeah, right?
Sure.
It's gone.
I mean, you could also have said anyone who survived the Holocaust has had this exact same experience.
Yeah. And so I'm now faced with looking at my future stretching before me, not as one necessarily filled with physical pain unendingly, but I'm in sort of psychological agony that everyone I've loved is dead. And is it possible to get through that? Yes, people get through that. They do. But what if I'm just like, you know, I'm done. Like, am I that person that you think the state should step in and
well,
prevent
let's not
me.
Talk about the state stepping in
okay,
and doing
well,
anything.
Am I that person that
somebody should step in?
That shouldn't be killing himself in this scenario?
I think you shouldn't be. Because I'm going to bring it back
what about
to
my,
like the
what about
Holocaust
my choice,
survivors.
You know? What happened to my choice?
Your Holocaust survivor, like there is something valuable to you having survived. And like there's something meaningful to your life being the living memory of other people's lives. And maybe, just maybe, there's someone that's going to come along down the line who's much younger than you, who you're going to develop a relationship with that you wouldn't otherwise develop that relationship with because you're too busy being with friends and family, and
maybe
you change their life for the better.
It's,
there's a lot
anything's
of
anything's
like,
possible.
Right. And
I just feel like there's respect for agency that I'm concerned with here.
Okay. I hear that. I hear that respect for agency. But I feel like that is what you're doing, though, is I feel like a person in that position is struggling with a lack of perspective. Just because they can't imagine the value of their ongoing life doesn't mean that there isn't value in their ongoing life.
Yeah, but again, that's like saying, well, if we extend Lord of the Rings another 20 minutes, it will be some degree of entertaining, right? It might not be as entertaining as the climactic scene, but it's not going to be worthless. It'll be valuable to some degree. Right? Should we keep making this movie even longer? or is it long enough? And let's end it now. Short and sweet.
We could give you lots of reasons to support Labyrinths on Patreon, including ad-free episodes and exclusive patron-only content. But why not hear it direct from a listener?
Hi, this is Cannon. I'm a big supporter of the Labyrinths Patreon page because the work that these people do is really thoughtful, and it's one of my favorite podcasts and Patreon accounts in the world.
Visit patreon.com/KnoxRobinson. A long life, I mean, the fundamental thing I'm proposing here is that a long life is not necessarily a better life than a short life.
I'm saying that a life is not a movie that needs to have a nice, perky ending for it to be valuable.
If a long life is better than a short life, then we should be striving for infinite life.
Aren't we?
I mean, if we could cure all diseases,
I think
we
should.
Could...
I think we should try curing all diseases. And you know what? This is an interesting. Now we're going sci-fi. I think that the ideal world is one where people don't die by disease or accident. They do die by choice.
So the only deaths are suicide.
Yes.
Is the ideal world.
Yes.
I'm kind of into that.
Right?
You got on your own terms. But how is our current world that different from that?
Because I think that a lot of people have unfinished business.
Yeah, but I think if you've... I don't know how exactly you draw the line here, but I think I would be okay with a world in which if you've made it up there, you know...
Ish. What is the line? Is it like retirement age? Because I feel like retirement, like yours, like 70. And I'm like, retirement is like 65. They've only had 5 years of life to be on vacation. And you're like, well.
You want to call it centenarian? Let's say you if you pass 100, does that make you happy?
I'm asking you what makes you happy.
My point is that like...
And actually, now that you bring up centenarians, like, let's talk about all the people in Japan who live very, very long lives and mm-hmm. have great social relationships with other old people who live very long lives. And I think like the thing that makes old age suck is how, like, especially in Western culture, is how isolated you become. And...
Yeah, I mean, you're still fundamentally talking about about suicide as an escape from a sucky life. And mm-hmm. when you frame it that way, I understand this opinion that, well, you probably shouldn't be doing that. And we should be applying some sort of societal pressure, either peer group pressure, maybe the hand of the state.
Well, maybe
has,
some support,
you know,
so they don't feel the
yeah,
need to.
Right. Try and find ways to combat that feeling because that feeling isn't your authentic self, right? I mean, this is when people say, oh, it's not him.
Or it's your authentic self that's temporary, though. I think that's the thing that's really tragic about it, is you can feel suicidal in a moment, but you might not feel suicidal the next day. But if you didn't make it, if you've like acted upon it, then you didn't get to find out that you were not feeling suicidal next day. You're just gone.
Yeah.
And that's what's tragic about it.
Is it tragic? Why is it necessarily tragic?
Because
this is what, you know, maybe this is my take on this comes from just being an existential nihilist in a way.
Yeah, okay. Like, so your take is right? That there's nothing inherently valuable about life. And I'm arguing that I think there's something inherently valuable about life.
Well, then it should stretch on forever.
I'm not saying that.
But isn't that a natural deduction?
Not necessarily, because built into life is...
More life is better. If life is inherently valuable, then more entities existing is better, and those entities being alive
don't
as long as possible.
Don't do this abducto ad absurdum thing with me, because you know that it gets complicated when you like talk about infinity, okay? Everything stops functioning when you talk about infinity, so don't go there with me. Like, this, the world that we live in now is one in which I think that having the opportunity to continue to discover who you are and to self-realize is probably better than one in which your self-realization is non-existence.
I just, who are you to make that decision for me, you know?
I guess that's the question. And maybe we should ask our listeners that.
Yeah, I suppose we should ask our listeners here if they think suicide is ever justified, if they would be okay, you know, can you imagine a scenario where someone comes to you and says, I'd like to shuffle off this mortal coil.
Just because I'm feeling
well,
it.
Well, I mean, if someone comes to you and says, I really am not feeling good about my life and here's why, then there are a number of ways you might be able to help them gain new perspective on their life.
Sure. And if someone approaches and says, gosh, I'm feeling really good today, I'm going to end on a high note.
Right.
What do you think about that?
I mean,
yeah, is that good? Yeah.
End on a high note.
It's a good day. You know, it's funny. Like, we talk about, actually, when my grandpa died, he died the day after his birthday, and it was a great day. And like, it was almost hard for me to feel sad for him that he had died the day after his birthday, because he went out the way any of us would want to go out, which is you're surrounded by your family and friends, you're having a good time, and you go to sleep and you don't wake up. But how would I feel differently if I knew that he had taken a bunch of pills that night?
That's what I was just going to ask you. Yeah.
Decided to like out himself. I mean,
he's 91. It's on his birthday. He just saw all his friends and family and grandchildren. His wife is, you know, basically gone. Doesn't recognize him.
So he takes some pills.
So
he has
a great day and walks out the back door. Like, I respect the shit out of that if that's what he did. I don't know. Who knows if he did that? I don't think he did, but I think he got lucky. if he told me I'm thinking about doing this, I wouldn't try to talk him out of it. I would respect his autonomy. And I would say, like, you know, I think you've earned the right to make that choice at this point, right?
I probably would not try to talk him out of it either, because he was 80-something and...
Well, he was 90.
No, he was 90. Yeah, he was 90.
He was 90 turning 91.
Yeah, he turned 91.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a good long run.
My point is that there clearly is a scenario where you're not trying to talk someone out of it.
Sure.
Right?
Okay, so is 90 the line?
Well, I think it's not a simple line. It's a combination of factors. But I think maybe the note I want to end on here, aside from asking listeners where they would draw the line on under what circumstances they wouldn't be trying to talk someone out of it, which I do want to, I am curious about that, is what does it do to you to really stare into the abyss and to really think about suicide? Because the other side of this question is maybe not when is it okay, but like, what is the value of thinking about your own non-existence in depth? Like, really, really thinking about what it's going to mean to not be here and contemplating it. As you said at the beginning of this conversation, it made you feel better about your present life by really seriously thinking about how you would leave it.
Mm-hmm.
And
like the idea that no one's forcing you to live this life.
Yeah. And I think that's why in Zen, for instance, there's a significant focus on death and a sense of, you know, even in meditation, you're practicing trying to sort of void the experience of self, to step into what it is to not exist. Do you feel like there's a value in looking into the abyss that way? Like, is that something you recommend for all people, that they contemplate their own potential non-existence?
I would recommend everyone contemplating their own non-existence. Also, I would recommend people contemplating the impermanence of anything that is they're experiencing in their life. So the one thing that's really true about the abyss is it's permanent. That's the one thing that is permanent. And so also contemplate deeply the impermanence of whatever it is that you are doing and the preciousness of your life, which is fundamentally impermanent. So there.
All right. Well, we would love to hear your thoughts on this difficult and heavy subject.
Mm-hmm.
And if you have ideas or suggestions for other topics we can debate here on this series of serious and silly debates, let us know.
We're here for it.
You can contact us through our website, knoxrobinson.com.
Thanks very much.
Captain's Log, Stardate 89361.5. We've encountered a fascinating alien civilization. The people of Patreon Prime are humanoid in appearance, but possess vastly greater degrees of nuance, compassion, and intelligence than any race we have so far encountered. But what is perhaps most striking is their generosity.
Captain, the warp core is going critical.
Warning.
Divert all energy to patreon.com/KnoxRobinson.